Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order at 3:31, District Healthcare District Finance, Legal and Administrative and Real Estate Committee on January 11th, 2022, our first meeting of the year. I'd like to call for an approval of the agenda as it is submitted.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Letty. And we'll vote by acclamation. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, the motion is passed. Is there any public comment requiring a disclosure, Andrea?
No public comments at the moment, but we do have public with us.
Now, we do have public with us, and I will make the statement that at this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take actions on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion or action. Okay.
You understand that, Mayor Evans? You understand that clearly?
Well, please excuse my Brooklyn accent.
That's not what I meant.
I'd like to call for an approval of the minutes, but I know at least I have some recommendations for some subtle changes, nothing of consequence. Does anybody have any thoughts relative to the minutes besides me? If not, I'd like to focus everybody's attention to page 4, top paragraph. Last sentence of that paragraph says, and no transactions were completed. I was going to recommend unauthorized transactions if, Chris, you've had any real business dealings in the month that this occurred. If you have not had any, at the suggestion of my colleagues, I will withdraw my recommendation.
There were no inappropriate activities at all, or anything considered. So,
okay, so then no change needs to be made.
Arthur, I'm okay with adding the word unauthorized. It's clearer that way. Might as well add it.
I think so too. Thank you, Les. So I'd like to move that we incorporate that change there. Then moving to the next paragraph. Fourth line down, Zendel suggested that staff will legal contact each director describing the various area of entry. I think what Les was saying, if you'll allow me, was access to the system, not entry per se. And again, that's just the point of clarification. So we can discuss that if anybody would like to.
Just to clarify, what I meant was that it's really describe various areas that a director might be contacted.
Oh, okay.
A scammer.
Right. Okay.
So it's really describe various possible contacts that a director could have.
Okay. I'd like to incorporate that language as well, Andrea, if you will, and before we change it. And then on the last item, page 5. Paragraph 2, a fourth line from the end, the word considered. I'm suggesting that we did more than consider it. We decided not to recommend that staff move the agenda. So I'd like to recommend those changes. If there's no further discussion about amending the minutes, I'd like to call for the question, please. Oh, wait. I think I may have one more. On page 8, the last paragraph above adjournment, Chair Short suggested a radio program to invite not community members, but DHCD grantees to be able to promote themselves and the district via a radio show.
I'm sorry, where is that, Arthur?
Page 8, paragraph 4, line 3, we have the words invite community members for 30 minutes every week And my intent was to invite DHCD grantees, organizations that we promote, that we finance, to give them a platform to describe themselves to the community, which I can't imagine anybody turning down, which indirectly gives us, the district, a sense of visibility on that platform. So it wasn't community members, it was DHCD grantees.
I agree, that's clear.
Okay, so with those changes, I'd like to entertain a motion to amend and accept the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
All by acclamation, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do we have a third aye?
I said aye.
Okay, we have three ayes. Okay, then the motion is passed unanimously. Chris, do you have an administrative report for us tonight?
I do, thank you. I appreciate it, Director Shore. So would just like to, as an informational item, it's on page 9. Just wanted to communicate to the committee that our CalPERS medical insurance automatically graduated or transitioned to a new plan. The previous plan was called PERS Choice. The new plan is called PERS Platinum. Some differences to the plans is, one is the prior plan was a 20% coinsurance benefit. The new plan is a 10% coinsurance, so it's a 90-10 versus an 80-20 component. The other thing that changed was the out-of-pocket for the coinsurance payments on the old plan for the single employee or just the employee versus the family was $3,000. Before the coinsurance was met, and 100% after that, and $6,000 for family. The new plan is $2,000 for employee and $4,000 for family.
How does that affect the budget item for this year?
We will see some, because we do have a premium increase of 13%. We will see some increase to the actual individual premiums. Collectively as a whole for that budget line item, we will still be under, because we still are under on our staffing vacancies and that. So plus I also budgeted for the vacancies for those employees to have full family benefits. And so it may, I think we're covered there as well, so.
What's the waiting period, Chris?
For a new hire?
Yeah.
It's effective the first of the month following hire.
Oh, that's great. Okay, excellent.
Just to clarify, was this change from choice to platinum something that we had no choice about, or did we decide to do it?
Yeah, that's what I indicated, that, beyond our choice, it, CalPERS changed that plan, or it's actually Anthem Blue Cross automatically changed that plan. So so PERS Choice does not exist any longer.
Okay, my second question is are there other health plans offered to our employees, or it's basically this or take it or leave this?
We can entertain other options, but we've traditionally gone with whatever the plan was that was chosen by the district for the employees.
No, that's not what I mean. Do we offer one choice, or do we have a menu that they can choose a higher or a lower deductible?
We've traditionally offered one choice. But what we can do in the budgeting process, which that's what I anticipate doing this year with the budget, is to evaluate other plans and bring a recommendation to the board with some options.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And also to allow people within a plan. First of all, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to this. Do employees contribute anything to the cost of their health insurance?
They do not. And I think we want to be a little careful with this because sometimes, depending on which plan could be chosen, the premiums could be pretty pricey for the benefits that are selected. So like HMO versus PPO.
And de facto, less de facto, the copay is a contribution to the care.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that an employee might say, I really would prefer, even if I personally need to pay a monthly premium, I'd rather have no deductible, because you said there's a $3,000 coinsurance deductible.
$2,000,
whatever. It was three.
The newest $2,000.
The point is they might decide, I want to choose a plan that has a lower deductible and a lower copay, but I'm willing to kick in, you know, $100 a month, $50 a month, whatever, just because I would rather have that kind of plan, and it would allow patients to choose. Now, employees to choose. Now, maybe that's too complicated for an organization our size. I'm just asking the question.
Well, and part of, to answer your question, Director Zemel, is that, you know, we do offer for the employees up to $3,000 a year reimbursed for any out-of-pocket expenses. So the what was the $3,000 and now the $2,000, employees would be able to be reimbursed through the district for those out-of-pocket expenses.
And Les, the other side of that coin is the young, healthy, robust youngster on our staff saying, I'm willing to take a bare bones plan that only cost half as much as the regular plan, and I expect to see the delta in my paycheck. And now you're starting to get very, very complicated over.
Well, that's an entirely different issue. That's an entirely different issue.
It's the same issue with the minor son. You know, the person who wants to have, who's willing to pay more is one side of that coin, and the person who wants to pay less is the other side, and expecting that dollar value in their paycheck. So I think we got to be really, really careful. This is not a bad plan, especially if we're reimbursing people for up to $2,000, up to the copay. They're effectively not paying anything for the plan.
Well, and one thing too is that, lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
My point is, I think some employees might want to have a choice. Not that they can get more salary in lieu of health insurance, but that they might want to choose a lower cost to the district plan in lieu of, well, they might want to trade off having less copay. Now, I didn't realize we reimburse all out-of-pocket expenses. So it kind of, that must be an administrative nightmare.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely not, because we have the third party CPA firm, Mangus, which we pay $500 a month, that actually processes those reimbursements to the employees. So the employees have to submit the explanation of benefits along with either proof of payment, or they can send in the actual provider's bill, and then Mangus will make the payment. But we have 10, 11 employees, and it's not really an administrative problem. The other thing that I was going to mention is that, you know, we do have where the district pays 100% of the premium. Now, it also pays 100% of the premium, not only for the employee, but for the family and dependents. So, you know, a single employees just get the benefit of the single insurance, where employees with families and dependents get the benefit of the full insurance premium. So, you know, I just think we want to be careful, you know, when we're talking about, you know, choices and that sort of thing.
Chris, you know, if you recall, when we went to Mangus, it was because before that it was the staff that was handling all the reimbursements and for the HIPAA.
It's a privacy yeah. thing, so that we're not processing those internally. But so for us, it's, you know, administratively, it's very easy.
Okay, I'll be interested to hear what you come up with next year. But again, I do think that sometimes choice is something that employees like, and if it doesn't cost the district any more, then I think that choice might be something that our employees find of benefit.
Okay.
So would it make sense then to come up with then a baseline through our analysis, and that's what the district will pay, and anything above that in premium that the employee would pay the difference? Because I think that's what I'm hearing you say, but.
Well, I not necessarily. I mean, I think that there are, you know, it's just like you can go to California Care and you can get Blue Cross with different levels of copay versus deductibles. And the costs aren't that different, but people feel better, say, not having a deductible. Now, I didn't realize that you actually pay the deductible. So it's almost full insurance. So I don't know. I guess what I'm asking is look and see what's out there, see what the employees like, and see what other districts do too, so that just because we've been doing it that way all along doesn't mean we have to keep doing it that way all along.
Okay, any other comments about this aspect of Chris's report?
Donna has his hand up.
I just have a question. Would you be staying within the Anthem Blue Cross plan? So whether it be offering somebody a PPO or an HMO, or are you looking going outside the plan, outside of CalPERS?
Well, you could. I mean, I don't know what Kaiser or Desert Oasis or all those other plans.
No.
I mean, you're talking.
I'm very happy with what we have. If you want one vote, I'm very happy with what we have.
Yeah. I have to tell you,
we're all very happy.
Well, that would be more of an administrative,
additional
challenge to do all of that.
Don't take the wheels off if they're running smoothly on track, is my thinking. All right, any other thoughts on this?
Not everybody liked my idea.
No one likes your idea. But we're trying to be polite. Anyway, okay, Chris, anything else that you want to submit?
No, just a reminder that we're still working with two units at the Medical Plaza. We did have one unit showing over the last week. Don't know the results of that yet. But,
okay, so. Thank you. If we can migrate on to the financial reports, I'm going to go through the list. And whoever has a thought to interject, please feel free. On pages 11 and 21, the district and the LPMP financial statements. Any thoughts or comments about that?
I have a question on page 14.
Me too. Go ahead.
Okay. My question on page 14 is on item 5112, the vacation sick holiday expense. We're over budget by 7,000. Just wanted to know if there's any comments on that, Chris?
But which code did you say? I'm sorry.
5112, vacation, sick, holiday expense.
It's just there's more vacation being accrued than what's actually been used. And most of that's been as a result of the pandemic and that, but
people not wanting to take time off.
Correct.
Do we have a payoff program for people in lieu of, or do we have a mandated time off? If either.
It's encouraged to be a mandated time off in the sense that we have a maximum accrual for each employee. So when they do reach that maximum, they're required to take time off, or they lose the
self-regulating.
Additional accrual. Yeah,
self-regulating. I have a question about line.
Okay, so before we move on, can I just finish up on that? So you don't have any concerns about it? People aren't losing their time off, right? And they're not accruing too much because we have that policy, but we're okay with that?
Right, yeah, because Eric, who processes payroll and handles all this, very good at communicating with the staff when they're approaching their maximum accrual. So each employee then is mindful of, you know, taking a day off or more to keep under that level.
Okay, thank you. And the thank second you. Question on this page, number 14, is item 5160, the education expense. I see on here that we're very under budget on this one. We have that in place to encourage our employees to continue their education, but.
It's there for that purpose, but the main part of the budgeting is, you know, for if we're doing, travel kind of related seminars, prior to the pandemic, you know, Colorado and other staff were attending conferences and seminars and that were out of state and different things. So that's part of what's there. And then also for what you'd indicated for potential for continuing type of education type of expense.
So the majority of it is because we're just not having any educational opportunities like seminars and so forth.
Correct.
Okay, those are my questions on that page. Thank you.
Before you leave that page on the vacation expense thing, I noticed that it's mostly a variance for the month, but for the year, it's only a slight variance. Is that just sort of a timing issue?
It's because over the year to date, it's, 7,000. Over budget, so.
Okay,
Chris, I just have definitional questions on 5115 and 5119. I don't recognize the acronyms for those two departments.
Okay, the NEOP is actually what now is CalFresh, and it began as NEOP, Nutritional Education and Obesity Prevention. And this was a county-funded program that a former employee has been working on up until recently. And so any labor associated with that has been allocated to that actual program. And with regard to the NEOP, that's reimbursed labor from the county funded program.
I just didn't recognize the acronym. And the other one below it, please.
Yeah, the other one, we could probably take the RSS out because that was pre-pandemic when we had the Ready, Set, Swim program that we were allocating labor to that, as well as the CVHIP. And there's some allocation through that and also with the Desert Healthcare Foundation. So a lot of allocation that we're doing over to the foundation as a result of the collaborative process with the CBOs and that. So any of labor that's associated with the foundation work is being allocated over the foundation through that cost code or that line item. So that's why you see them as negatives, because they're being paid for through our wages expense on the district side, but then they're being allocated over to the foundation. So they're like a net reduction to the district expense.
Thank you. Okay. Any other thoughts on these pages 11 to 21? Page 22, the accounts receivable aging looks okay. Again, the foundation's the only laggard, but it's still not an issue. The deposits, tax receipts, IMP deposits, the district check register, I just have one question about the district check register. It, you know, when you add up the two payments, we paid Kaufman and Hall $250,000. You have them online, check number 16723, and we have them on 15733, $225,000 roughly. Seems like a lot of money for what we're getting from Kaufman and Hall. Am I missing something, guys? Anybody else have any concerns about this?
It's a lot of money.
Isn't much of the work Kaufman Hall done for the ad hoc committee, which some of us aren't privy to?
I don't think it adds up to that kind of bread. I just want some other thoughts.
Arthur, I think you should talk to the CEO and the president.
I'm sorry, say it again, please.
I think you should talk to the CEO and the president.
Okay, the president or the new president?
The point I'm trying to make is I don't have a strong opinion because I'm not privy to some of the things that are happening. So I would suggest that.
Yeah, I can tell you this. We've only had two meetings, I think, of the two of maybe three meetings with Kaufman Hall at the most. So I will mention it to Madam President, and she can discuss the matter with Conrado. I'd rather that she do that if you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that.
I'm not talking
the responsibility, but I'd rather flow.
Is the president on the committee? I'm sorry, I don't know who's on the ad hoc committee.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Good. All right. Well, I'll make a note to contact her and get this into her thought process. Any other questions at all about the credit card allocation? I have one issue here, and it's just a protocol issue. I don't know where it is because I marked it and I'm not seeing it now. But there was a discussion about a payment to relative to district Director Rogers and Jana. I think we need to amend that language to reflect her last name, because if we're going to call Alejandro Espinoza, we owe Jana the same courtesy. And can someone find that, or do you want me to hunt it down and send?
We'll find it based on your reference.
Yeah. Okay. It's just a courtesy. You know, because otherwise we're going to get it's just a courtesy and it's just the proper thing to do. Okay, I'd like to move the question about acceptance of the financial reports, and this includes both the month of December 31, 2020, and the first month of the new year, January 2022. This year.
So is that including number 10 grant payment schedule?
Yeah, that would include the grant payment
schedule. I do have a question about that with that one report.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay, on page 37, on the Martha's Village grant, that started off at being at $210,905, and then we had a balance of $115,98. I just wanted to know, Donna, what's going on with that grant? Is there?
That's just the balance of the grant, Letty, of what?
There's no problem or anything with?
No, it was approved at 210, and it was, they're just drawing down against progress reports and budget progress reports.
Okay, very good. That was it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I want the record to reflect that the last line of that page is highlighted out of due respect for Dr. Zendel, who will undoubtedly ask the question of the carry forward from the previous year, but hopefully my comments will short circuit that discussion.
Well, and what we're doing here is just trying to highlight that The 1.8 million that was forwarded to from the prior year to continue
to carry forward for
this fiscal year is that any new grants that are being awarded are being reduced from that 1.8 million to begin with. So if you look over to the right of the far right column down, you know, two thirds down the page, that amount was 1.8 million to begin with. And we have now awarded $300,000 of grants. So it's reducing that amount to 1.5 million. And then those grants that have been awarded are then shown below that in the current year column of the 154,000 and the 150,000 that are the final two grants listed there. So that's the way we're going to record that or present it so that we can utilize that 1.8 million first before we go into the current year budget. If that makes sense. So that's why you're going to see on the financial statements, you're going to see essentially zero grant expense.
Right.
Because we're utilizing this 1.8 million first before we go to the $4 million in the current year budget, if right. That makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Can I have one more question that's kind of unrelated to grants, this question, the data that we're collecting right now that we're going to be putting into our portal, will we collect any of the data for these current grants that are listed on here, Donna, or is that just because it's kind of like a different project that we won't collect any data?
Right, we're actually starting with the approval of the strategic plan and the grants that have been approved or will be approved against those goals and performance measures. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions relative to the financials? If not, I'd like to call the question. Is there a motion to accept the financials as modified and discussed?
So moved.
Second.
By acclamation, all in favor, say aye.
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 So moved.
Director Schar, I failed. There was one item that I wanted to communicate during the earlier CAO report, if I may.
Please.
We have had the last 2 years audits with London Guthrie. I think you're very familiar with Gary Dack, who has done the presentation of the audits to the board members the last couple of years. We were approached by Mr. Dack about a week or so ago, indicating that he is entering a phasing out period, going into retirement over the next couple of two or three years. And what they're proposing, and this is for consideration, we'll bring it back more in detail in February, but I wanted you to be aware that the audit function of London Guthrie is being split off so that it's all current staff that has been working for London Guthrie, but the audit function is going to split off into a new organization called Coachella Valley Accounting and Auditing Firm. And Gary will be working with them during this transition. And the staff remains the same. The audit, his other audit partner with London Guthrie will continue with this new organization, but I just wanted the committee to be aware that there's a potential change with this, and then at the February meeting we'll bring the engagement letters, and if there's any feedback from the committee, if they're fine with going forward for the next couple of years, or does the committee want to look at doing another RFP now or wait a couple of years until they're kind of that 4 or 5 year period that we normally work with a CPA firm before we do an RFP. So
are we, required, Are we required to do an RFP because it's not the same firm?
We're not required to. It's just I'm putting it out there for the committee. If the committee is fine with entertaining the engagement letters with the new firm that would be breaking off from Lennon Guthrie, because the current, we have a contract per se. We do have an annual engagement letter that's completed for each annual audit. And so that's what would be presented for the next fiscal year. Lennon Guthrie, under the current engagement letter, they still need to complete the state controller's report for the district by January 31st, as well as the Form 990 tax return for the foundation, which they've indicated both will be completed by the end of this month.
Thank you. Any other questions related to that?
Well, just my comment is that I also was aware of the change, and Shannon, who was the one that I think was the lead on this audit, I think she's been pretty much handling the audit 100%. So I think she's more than capable. And I believe that Lennon Guthrie, with Shannon continuing, is it Shannon? I thought it was Shannon.
Yeah, but Gary Dack has been the lead on all of our audits. It was Shannon who was the lead on the single audit for the federal money. Right. So that's all of her, that's her only participation with the district and foundation at thus far.
Okay, yeah, and there's not, I think they're the only firm that do A1 audits in the Valley. So it's a very specialized job there. But I guess I'm either way, I feel comfortable with continuing with them for another year. I can be convinced if staff feels that they want to open it up for RFP, then that's fine with me as well.
Okay, we'll bring the engagement letters to the February meeting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris. Okay, the last item on the formal agenda is, we've accepted the, we voted on this. All right, informational item that Chris wants to bring to our attention, please.
Okay, with regard to the seismic work, it's been on the back burner for a while. It kind of keeps, coming to and fro. With some discussion with Coffin Hall, we had also met with a representative from Simpson, Gumpert, and Hager just to get, an update or, a thought of where we need to be going. Since the seismic assessment was completed back in 2019. So one of the things that, was really highlighted is separate from the structural work that is needing to be done for seismic, which would affect essentially three buildings, depending on whatever shape or fashion bed number wise needs to be done there. However, the non-structural component is pretty much necessary throughout all 22 buildings. And the non-structural essentially in a nutshell talks about, securing, any kind of plumbing, anything that would be possibility for creating fire, flooding, et cetera, things that need to be tied down, strapped down during an earthquake. And so this is essentially essential for all buildings, but there was a timeline that was reinforced with that as of January 2024, there needs to be a structural engineering evaluation report for the non-structural work. And so just wanted to inform the committee that We will probably with next month, if not sooner, to the board. Not sure yet the exact timing, but we will be bringing an engagement or a proposal for consideration of approval for that work. But there's still some discussion and work that needs to be done with Kaufman Hall, the ad hoc committee, and that. So this is just a high level informational component. In just wanted to highlight that in the assessment that was done 3 years ago, the fee for the non-structural assessment is in the neighborhood of $3 million. So what we're wanting the engineering firm to do is, in this proposal that they would be bringing for consideration, is just a proposal to do the work and also an update to what their assessment was before on a high level, if there's anything that's changed with regard to any, you know, code or OSHPOD kinds of things, building codes, et cetera. So just informational, we're not bringing that in engagement proposal today, but just wanted to make that a communication item to the committee.
Thank you.
Are you saying that the non-structural engineering evaluation report that has to be completed by 2024 is going to cost about $3 million?
That's my understanding, yes. Wow. So, and part of the, or why this is becoming critical from a timing standpoint now is the this evaluation, or this, yeah, evaluation report, according to the engineer, can take 12 to 18 months to complete. And so we're now essentially a little less than 2 years. However, we don't want to lose sight of the fact that we need to be working on this if we're going to meet that time frame, because there's three dates that are coming up. So there's the this January 2024 date for the engineering evaluation. January of 2026 requires a complete set of construction documents. And the building permits need to be submitted by January of 2028. So we're just wanting to bring attention to that there needs to be some work moving forward. And I know that there will be some dialogue with Tenet, the operator, in conjunction with however this work will be completed for the non-structural engineering evaluation report.
The reality is that the first date is probably the most significant of all, because I would predict that the state legislature will modify the requirements in a very fundamental way somewhere down the road, and therefore developing construction plans really becomes irrelevant unless and until the state legislature takes a position on that. And I would expect that to happen either this year or next year. But phase one, what Chris is talking about, is something that has to go forward, all other things equal. So we'll be expecting that coming back soon. Chris, I just have one other question before we adjourn the meeting. Last time we spoke about the Steve Valentine recommendation that Conrado was making, and Letty and Les were focused to the conclusion that we probably where is that in the equation of things these days?
We will be putting together, I anticipate this month, with Conrado out of the office, I'm working with creating a request for proposal, and that we will bring that to the committee, I anticipate, in February for that RFP to be reviewed and approved for us to go out for bidding.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for that update. Yes, sir.
As I said last time, before we put a request for proposal, we need to be clear on what is the question we're trying to answer. And I'm still very unclear. And we also talked about making sure the other directors saw the work that was done in 2019. So they could also form questions that they feel need to be answered. I'm of the opinion that there really isn't anything else that needs to be answered, but maybe other directors have a different opinion, but they need to read the 2019 report. How can we put out a request for proposal when we don't know what the question is?
Well, and the RFP would include reviewing our reports and determining what additional, if anything, beyond the report that we have in-house would benefit us going forward.
In essence, your thoughts would be incorporated in the RFP, Les.
You have your hand up.
So my question is actually relevant to the item on number 7.1. And Chris, you mentioned the fact that that the reason why this is necessary is because there's been changes to a lot of the regulations. This is a costly endeavor that we're going to have to do. Is that going to include like changes that we anticipate again next year, probably? Do we have to be spending that much money with if we anticipate that every year there's changes to OSHA and seismic and everything else?
No, I mean that's what we're understanding is that. The update now is from like 3 years ago. Do they expect any significant changes? Maybe not, but it would also be more in detail. I mean, the $3 million estimate was, you know, kind of a high level estimate based on, you know, kind of a walkthrough of the facilities with kind of generalized information, but you know the actual valuation report would require much more in depth with contracting firms that would actually have an estimator involved that would actually come in and estimate this work to be done. And as far as it changing drastically, you know, on an annual basis from here till 2024. Don't think that that's going to happen, but we need that 12 to 18 months to be getting this report put together. If in fact we are planning to move forward with this project, not knowing whether the 2030 deadline date is going to move or not. And, you know, I would hate for us to get, you know, putting ourselves behind the eight ball if we were sitting waiting for something and all of a sudden we're like, oops, we didn't do something we should have.
I know it's necessary for us to get started, but I'm just wondering, is there like in this agreement that we are moving towards, would there be like amendments that it would be that would include in next year to evaluate it, not to have to start all over again, but that to evaluate what are the changes to be able to incorporate it? And that's what I was kind of wondering.
Right. Yeah. And we'd make sure that there's language in the proposal and engagement to do this work.
Okay. Thank you.
That we wouldn't be doing, you know, having to, you know, restart with, you know, significant expense to adjust something.
Chris, I think it would be helpful for the directors that weren't here in 2019 when this non-structural report was last done, not the 3 million one, but the scope of what they thought it would be, again, that they read that or that we just summarize it so that we know what we're talking about, because it is even unclear to me what on both the structural and the non-structural, what the terms were, for example. We heard about all the terms. We heard about the timeline. We had an estimate of what might happen with legislation, all that thing. I mean, it does sound like a study session that looks at the structural and non-structural seismic issue separate from the whole hospital configuration issue, or maybe with part of it, ought to be scheduled sooner rather than later, so that before we agree to a proposal that ends up costing us $3 million, the directors have a clear idea what it is we're trying to answer.
Mm-hmm. And there will be that communication. I mean, we still need to meet more in detail with this, with the ad hoc committee too. I just wanted to be bringing it to attention so that, you know, at this committee level, that we're starting to be thinking in terms of what potentially may be before us on, you know, a financial basis. So yes, the board will be fully refreshed at some point in the not too distant future. I'm pretty sure of that.
Any other thoughts and comments on this before we adjourn?
If I may, just Jeff will be bringing forward also legal updates related to the budget. And ACHD is actually trying to work with the governor's office on the huge surplus that we have to assist with seismic and the hospitals. But we don't know that that's going to happen. But Jeff will provide a legal update as that relates.
Thank you.
Thank you. Barring any other new business or informational items, I'd like to move to adjourn. And Chris, by the way, what I was talking about related to Jana is actually in the foundation on page 10 of the foundation report. I misspoke when I brought it up at this in the district meeting.
Okay, so we can address that when we go to the foundation
meeting. Yeah, just so you know where it is. It's on page 10. Anyway, so I'm going to call the meeting to an end. And with that, I would also, with approval of my colleagues and staff, I would appreciate the opportunity to open the Desert Healthcare Foundation meeting. Is there any reason for us not to move forward with that? Okay, then I'd like to call that meeting to order at exactly 4:23 and call for an approval motion relative to the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Now in favor or by acclamation, say aye.
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 Okay, thank you very much. Is there any public comment in the queue, Andrea?
No public comments.
Thank you. Okay, then let's move forward. I would focus everybody's attention to the December 9th minutes. There's any adjustments to those minutes before we make a motion to approve?
Is it December 9th or 7th? The agenda says the 9th and the minutes say the 7th.
Then it's the 7th. The minutes,
it's the minutes, the 7th.
Rule. The minutes rule. Okay, I'd like to accept the motion to move approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
And all by acclamation, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. The motion is approved. I'd like to focus everyone to item 5 on the agenda, review of the financials. Once again, pages 3 to 7, deal with the P&L, the profit and loss, the actual experience from July through December of 2021, both the balance, profit and loss sheet, the balance sheet, and the balance sheet. Do we have any questions about those items?
No.
Do we have any? Excuse me? No?
No.
Any issues related to the deposits, page 8, check register, page 9. If not, item 4, the credit card expenditure. Again, I'd like to just formally recommend that we make an amendment to include Jana's last name, and that's listed on line 2190 under foundation. We're Director Rogers and Jana are referenced as the recipients of that check.
Alternatively, we could only refer to Alejandro Espinoza as Alejandro.
Well, either way, I just think we have to be balanced. Otherwise, we are exposed, and the trick is to minimize the target. Thank you. But with all respect to Mr. Espinosa, I think he would reference the minutes in the history of this.
I was joking.
Organization. Joking. So that when his great grandchildren read the minutes, they make no mistake about which Alejandro was involved in this. So no, but either way, let's recognize that. Are there any issues relative to grant schedule? Hearing none, I'd like to move action to accept the financials for the period November, December, 2021.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor by acclamation, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. I see no other items on the agenda for the foundation. Does anybody have any new business not recognized on the agenda? Hearing none, I'd like to request that we adjourn the meeting at 4:27. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It was a pleasure doing business today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye.
Stay safe. It's getting crazy. So we got to stay safe first. Thank you.